Hey there, folks. This is Richard. I just wanted to mention before this episode started that I made a boo-boo. I plugged in my nice microphone, and the stupid software I use randomly defaulted to my webcam. Don't worry, it only took me well over an hour into the episode to notice that I'd made this error. And this might shock you to know that a nice compressor microphone sounds slightly better than a shitty webcam microphone. Anyway, here's the episode. Hope you can hear it with your listenables. Bye.
She met a guy like you. Now she's dead.
You should believe in ghosts, P-Brain.
He's a closet!
Don't hurt me, please!
Don't keep me waiting for those onions, Herman!
This is all the whiskey you possess?
Everyone out of the way of the bulldozer!
The iguana with a tongue of fire. 3, 2, 1.
Hello, and welcome to Hello, This is the Doom Show. I am Richard.
And I am Brad.
And we're here to bring you the best of Talking Guys. Wow.
Home Improvement Season 7. The journey continues.
Folks at home, this is a momentous, an evening of momentousness. Brad is back on the show. My God.
I have returned.
Dude, it has been way too long. We figured out, we haven't talked in 10 months?
10 months, yeah. I'll tell you what I've been up to. I had a serious medical condition.
Yep.
Nearly died, quit smoking, lost over 50 pounds, and I'm back in the podcast game.
Yeah, boy. Dude, I don't know if you want to talk about this, but wasn't too long ago when you could still smoke in the house, in the apartment.
Yep.
And you can hear you click-clacking on your lighter.
Yeah.
And I could hear you, sucking away on the freaking cigarette. And yep. People would complain, like, I just quit smoking. I felt bad for turning up those moments because I've always known smokers. My best friend Scott, I don't know, he's quit a few times over the years I've known him. I don't know if he's currently still quit or not. And my dad, yeah. Of course,
Mm-hmm.
So I've known plenty.
I'm done.
Yay, I'm so proud of you, man.
Thank you.
And stop sending me your 50 pounds. It's not fair. Keep it.
It wasn't easy either.
Mm-mm. Nope, we were talking about how bread is the devil.
Bread is the devil.
I love misquoting Bram Stoker's Dracula. Take me away from all this bread.
Classic.
We're about to talk Giallo. You know, when we talk Giallo, we got to spoil stuff. So if you haven't seen the film we're going to talk about, which is The Iguana with the Tongue of Fire, 1971, directed by mm-hmm. our boy, Ricardo Freida, then please go
Freida.
Watch it. I don't know if you know this, folks, but the Blu-ray from our friends, Arrow Video, is a revelation. If y'all remember the old bootleg of mm-hmm. Iguana with the Tongue of Fire, because there's a whole two sections of the film that are vitally important to knowing what's going on, and you can't see them because of the old bootleg.
No.
Brad, you don't know this. Did you know that I waited to watch that Blu-ray until we talked about it?
Wow. I did not know that.
But yeah, I held on to this Blu-ray for, well, it came out in 2019. So
wow, did it really?
Yeah, so almost 3 years I waited to watch this because you and I were going to do an episode on it.
Astounding. Woo, well, that's... it's been, it's part of our Frida.
Yeah, yeah.
Series.
So folks, you can backtrack and look at the archives, doomedmoviethon.com. Click on the frickin' podcast link and you'll see our archives. We got episode on The Ghost, Horrible Dr. Hitchcock, Tragic Ceremony. Did he do Double Face as well?
Yes.
And of course, Murder Obsession.
Yeah, episode 100?
Yeah, I think that was episode 100.
Yeah.
Damn.
Episode 100.
Oh, man. You know, I try not to get flagged for copyright stuff, so I'm not even going to play that siren, whatever. All of my sirens that I've done, I've had so many clips from movies and shit. Like, it drives me nuts because, like, I want to sample this soundtrack so bad. Because this soundtrack, before I ever got that bootleg, I had downloaded a compilation of Giallo soundtracks. And this one was on there, and the dude who had posted it didn't post the track listings. So I had a hour and 10 minute Giallo mix with no clue what the fuck I was listening to.
I remember
this was such, this music for this film by good old is this Cipriani? Yeah, Stelvio Cipriani, yep. Man, this is one of the perfect Giallo scores.
It's good.
He introduces that theme, and then he reincorporates it in weird ways. You get all those weird alternate takes of the same thing.
Yeah.
That's just how they do. So I'm going to go ahead and read to you folks at home the short plot synopsis for The Iguana with the Tongue of Fire. Judge Judy Scheindlin, a former judge from New York, tackles actual small claims cases with her no-nonsense attitude, in which damages of no more than $5,000 can be awarded.
I think we watch different movies.
That's something called Judge Judy. I got confused because the font is yellow, so I thought it was a giallo.
Easily made, easily made.
Oh, that's funny stuff, people. That's
just take a break.
That's classic Doom show.
It really is.
Oh my goodness gracious gosh. A corpse is found in the trunk of a car that belongs to the Swiss ambassador to the UK. Speculations run wild as more people around the ambassador keep falling victim to the vicious killer. A former detective is hired to investigate.
Boom.
Yep. Former beater of hippies.
Slow-mo.
This starts with that opening music I discussed. Oh, by the way, the trailer for this movie is dumb. Like, the trailer that's online is a little bit of dialogue in English, and then people screaming and the music, and then that's it. It's typical Giallo trailer where they show the whole movie. I don't think they show the killer in this one, but, you know, we've all seen that trailer.
Yeah.
So we have that opening music, and we get welcomed to Dublin. I kept writing in my notes, this is England, over and over again. apparently I can't tell the difference, so sorry, folks.
Well, you know, British, English.
You know. The European Union is my favorite place to be. One thing we get from these opening credits is a little novel called A Room Without a Door by Richard Mann that this apparently was based on.
Right.
You know it doesn't exist. This book.
It does not exist.
No.
Nope.
I was so excited too. I was like, I want to pretend to be interested in reading that book.
Yeah, absolutely.
The second thing we get is directed by Willie Pareto.
Which, just like Richard Mann.
Yep. Our friend Ricardo Freyda, his career was a little rocky. He was getting old, I think, by the 70s. Maybe not too old, but...
Yeah.
Oh, no, never
mind. Old enough.
Never mind. He was born in 1909. So, yeah, he was he was not ready for these hip young giallo kids. So he did contribute to this screenplay for Iguana with the Tongue of Fire, but then he didn't write again until Murder Syndrome, which was also a huge disaster.
Right.
He got into this thing where I think he was successful, and then he started to make movies that were not successful, and that was just a bad time for our guy. Plus, he was ancient, saving up for retirement.
Probably. Let me ask you a question. Did you get the Camille Keaton Italian box set?
Yes, it is stashed away.
Yeah.
It is opened. I have not watched anything out of it yet.
Tragic Ceremony was so good.
The last time I watched that was when you and I covered it for the show.
Wow.
Yeah, that was like 1,000 years ago.
Yeah, I had not seen it since then until we got the box.
Nice.
And I watched it.
Oh, boy. Oh, I love it. So we get a bored housewife who's hanging out in a big old mansion. And she's just chilling, and there's someone watching her. And she finds out that the phone line's been cut, which she doesn't seem that alarmed about.
Nah.
But then the power gets cut, and it kills the soundtrack to the movie. I love that shit. It's so cool.
Yeah.
So we see that someone in sunglasses is watching her, and we get this stinger that's going to come out through the whole movie.
Yeah, the sunglass stinger.
Dude, and it works. It's so effective.
It does.
Oh, I was kidding. I don't think it was effective.
Oh, no. I mean, it works. It works for me because it's ridiculous.
Yes, I loved it, but it is stupid.
Yeah, it was. When I think of stingers, obviously I think of Halloween.
Yes.
Where he would put stingers in. Da-da-da. And I thought, here we are, like 7 years before Halloween. And every time we see a pair of sunglasses, ding dong.
And now, folks, before we get too in the weeds of the plot, just remember, this had a lot of screenwriters. And they all were working against each other.
Terrible, terrible fight.
I thought it was just me. But then I was watching some of the extras, and people were pointing out how messed up this plot is. If you get confused, it's okay. This is one of the most confusing gialli ever. Because, you know, you watch these movies, and when you go back a second time or a third time, you start to see little stuff you miss. Like, something like My Dear Killer or Seven Bloodstained Orchids, there might be shit that you're like, how did we get here? What is this? Then you watch the movie a third or fourth time, and you see, because you're being dumped, like you're having these info dumps thrown at you by all this dialogue, you finally hear, oh, that's where they mention that girl's weird haircut or whatever. whatever information you were missing the first time you watched it, it comes clear. That stuff isn't in this movie. You won't find it.
No.
This poor lady, the killer finds her, or she finds the killer, throws acid in her face.
Oh.
And then slashes her throat. Deep.
Pretty brutal.
Deep. This is like it's like that shower kill in the Crimes of the Black Cat.
Crimes of the Black Cat.
Except it's not a booby.
Right.
It's a throaty.
Pretty well done fake face for who we're working with.
It's funny because the main place I got all my like trivia from was talking about how, you know, the effects budget was super low. Mm-hmm. But then they're like, or these effects looked good for 1971. Mm. And I'm like, what? Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, it's none of our business, really.
Only circumstantially. If we'd been there, it would be our business.
Yeah.
So she's dead. Then presumably the next morning, we got some ladies being catty out in front of a different mansion, presumably. This is, I did not realize this was her, and I got so excited when I found out it was her, which is Valentina Cortese.
Absolutely.
Or Cortez, or Cortezer. She's a court jester.
Court jester.
I love this actress.
Yep.
She is so good. Her career was amazing.
She won, I don't think it was an Oscar, but she won, I think, an Italian Oscar. And then She's the one that worked with Bava, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, she was in good old Girl Who Knew Too Much. And in the same year, she was in Juliet of the Spirits, which is my favorite Fellini film. And she was in The Possessed, a.k.a. Lady of the Lake, which is Luigi Bozzoni. That's his...
Bozzoni.
His, like, sort of almost supernatural giallo that's weird, which I have that Blu-ray. I just need to watch it. It's because I liked it a lot. And then I think the Blu-ray was an impulse buy, and I just have not watched it. Like,
I understand.
Whoops. Not that I'd ever do that, right?
Nah.
She is having a little bit of a catty dialogue with one of my freaking favorite, dare I say it, underused, possibly underrated Giallo ladies, Dominique Bochero.
Mm-hmm.
She is the governess slash mistress of Valentina Cortez's husband. Oh, yes, and of course, her name is Mrs. Sobieski. She's Lily's grandmother.
Grandma.
Look at that. Lily Sobieski reference, folks.
I'm telling you, we're here for all of it.
Is she one of those people that has those articles like, whatever happened to Lily Sobieski?
Yeah. And then the second article is, look how much she looks like Helen Hunt.
What? But they're not related.
Or are they?
Or are they? Her mother...
Bringing you exclusives.
Her mother is Private Benjamin.
Private Benjamin.
I'm losing my mind. Anyway.
It's early.
Anyway, so they're out there with frickin' Renata Romano, who is another Giallo. He's a Giallo queen, except he's a man, baby. He plays the chauffeur in this movie, who is, they actually paint him red at one point and call him a fish because he's a he's a red herring.
Oh, I gotcha.
Hey, come on. But he's got a pair of sunglasses. Dun, dun, dun. So they're getting ready to leave, and the little kid, the son, opens up the trunk, and he has the weirdest reaction to a corpse being hidden in there.
Yeah, very odd.
Just go ahead and arrest this kid. He's going to be a murderer someday.
Yep. No way around it.
But yeah, the body in the trunk is very fun because it's the girl we saw killed earlier, but her face isn't nearly as mutilated as what we saw happen. It's just sort of a little bit messed up. They don't recognize who the lady is at first. The cops show up. And they're, you know, being really kid gloves with these people because Mr. Sobieski is Ambassador Sobieski, played by Anton Differing. Oh, my Lord.
Delicious.
This guy, his IMDb picture just says, ah, eyebrow. I love this guy. He's so freaking fun.
Very dependable guy.
He's a potty mouth in this movie. He says some words in it that I thought were not invented until we were kids.
Right. I know exactly what you're talking about.
The scene when he freaks out. Oh boy. But I know him best from Seven Deaths in the Cat's Eye. Seven Deaths in the Cat's Eyes, plural. Look at that. I love that movie so much. That has become one of my freaking favorite weird gialli. I love that movie.
The gorilla.
Yes. And then, of course, The Beast Must Die, which that was one of those movies I avoided for years just because it didn't look very good to me. The, you know, the werewolf break. Boy, was I wrong.
Let me give a little plug here. Our good friends David and Sherry Ladd actually covered that very film, The Beast Must Die, on their podcast, The Movie Clinic, which I highly recommend.
Yes.
Their Halloween Kills episode was fantastic.
Nice.
Of course, they've been good friends for a long time.
Oh, yeah. They are great people. Definitely check out The Movie Clinic. He comes back from Dublin. He sneaks in the house. Like, they didn't know he was home. He's just magically there. Adding to his suspiciousness. He was supposed to be in Dublin. Or wait, this is Dublin?
That's Dublin, and he was supposed to be in
Switzerland. Okay, gotcha. This is, yep, see, I'm getting confused already. The cops show up. We got Inspector Lawrence, And I think he's played by a real bona fide British person. Let me see. Where is... Oh, I'm having trouble because I'm on the Beast Must Die page. That's not helping me. This is someone named Arthur O'Sullivan.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, semi...
He looks kind of like Mr. Granger.
Yes, that is absolutely right. So he's been in a few things. But yeah, he's the cop. And I'll probably cut a lot of this ridiculousness out.
But it's quality.
It's all quality, yes. He says the weird racist line.
Holy crap. I almost texted you that last night, and I thought, how can I phrase this where when the FBI is reading it, they won't be like, what a racist.
Dude, this is so wild. So, these are not my words. He basically says something to the effect of, oh, throwing acid. That's something a woman or a colored person would do. And I'm like, excuse me, you piece of shit? What?
Crazy.
As long as you're not offended by anything to do with gay stereotypes, you'll be fine the rest of the movie. Oh, no.
Yeah. I mean, black people can kill any way they want to. They're not restricted to vitriol or acid.
Yes, yes. What we need is more restrictions on Swiss ambassadors.
Yes. Dangerous. Very dangerous.
Oh, boy. Okay, and here comes the first confusing bit. So they're talking and, they're doing their thing, and then they leave the room, and I call this guy Sneaky Pete.
Sneaky Pete.
This guy has a mustache, and he sneaks in from the secret bookshelf entrance, and don't know who he is.
No.
And we'll see him again later, and we will not know who he is. It's great.
We will not know then either.
We cut to the chauffeur, good old Renato Romano of Seven Bloodstained Orchids. I forgot to mention how great he is.
He's really good.
He retired from acting and became a big hotshot producer out in Hollywood.
Really?
Yeah. They're questioning him. He's not suspicious at all. They ask him about his shirt and he flips out because, what? I can't have a dirty shirt?
No.
And then we see a scene where a guy in a turtleneck is getting a payoff from our pal here, the ambassador. And he either is or isn't Valentina Cortese's son.
It's nebulous.
It is nebulous because there's another guy in the movie who acts like he's her son, who might be her lover. And we have no idea.
Hard to say.
All that matters is we've got Dominique Bochero performing in a nightclub. Oh, my God. She's playing the piano, and she's just singing this wordless song.
Elizabeth loves it. She loves that song.
Dude, it's so pretty. We get all the suspicious glances. Everybody's being weird. Our boy, Luigi Pastilli, shows up.
Heartthrob.
Yes, and... a person who I forgot was in this movie completely, Dagmar Lissander. Luigi Pastilli, of course, a giallo hero, a giallo freaking archduke. If, a freaking George Hilton's the king, then Luigi Pastilli is the freaking the duke.
Yeah, I love absolutely.
Him. And Dagmar Lissander is just, she's ubiquitous with Italian genre cinema and... she's all about that Oak Mansion.
It's Oak Mansion, Harold.
Someone kills the lights, and someone has killed the freaking governess / mistress, Dominique Bochero. She's been killed. And for some reason, our pal Dagmar Lissander, who plays Helen Sobieski, the daughter of the ambassador, she books it out of the nightclub, looking real suspicious. And then... the most outrageous Irish accent I've ever heard in my life rolls up, and it is Luigi Pastilli, It
sure is.
Playing an Irishman in my book, which I'm holding in my hands here. Giallo Meltdown, a movie thon diary, available now at Amazon.com. Page 4.
It is the first Giallo movie and the first Giallo. Giallo-thon, and I was saving that.
Oh, dude, I'm sorry to steal it.
Nope, it's fine. But I wanted to make a distinction that it is the first Giallo in the first Giallothon.
Flashback all those years. This book took me years to write. And, you know, the first chapters were never meant to be part of a book. They were just articles on my site. And
they were for funsies.
I was so excited to get to this movie that, yes, first film of the first movie-thon. And I have here the quote that our buddy Luigi Pastilli will say when they're going back to her place. "Well now, my fleet-footed filly, are we going to have it off in the bushes or on the bike?" Because, of course, he's a womanizing badass like you get.
Yeah.
And, like, what else would he be? But they go driving through the streets, and, dude, it's one of those things where the motorcycle is either strapped to a car and he's pretending to drive it, or it's like really good rear projection. But I think it's the former, not the latter.
Mm-hmm.
But he is acting his ass off, trying to act like he's fucking driving this motorcycle.
Mm-hmm.
It looks so bad. Oh God, it's so good. While she's in the house, he calls someone who doesn't answer at his place, but we see on the table next to the phone at his house a copy of Agatha Christie's Death on the Nile sitting on the table by the phone.
Topical, am I right?
Dude, because he's Irish, he knows all about the Nile.
Yep. Denial.
Yeah, denial isn't just a river in Egypt, bro.
Bro.
Dagmar and Luigi make the sex act.
They do it.
They do it to it, and I'm very proud of them. And then we cut to the most bizarre shit in this movie, Luigi Pastilli under a sun lamp.
Yeah, just lying in bed with a sun lamp on.
Yep. And the phone is ringing, and he pulls a Glenn Danzig and starts screaming, "Mother! Mother! Can you answer the phone tonight?" Yeah, that was good.
It was good.
Thank you.
Your interpretation was excellent.
So here we go. Grandma is the most obnoxious character in this movie, not because of her per se, but because of how people treat this woman.
Mm-hmm.
There's a running joke that she can't hear when people are talking because she has her glasses off.
Yeah.
It is not funny. And then they keep doing it.
Yeah. Somehow she's deaf because of her blindness.
And even more shocking than that, Luigi Pastilli is a single parent.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, yuck. And I turn the movie off because that's not an acceptable lifestyle.
No.
No.
F that.
No, if anything, I object to his sun lamp.
yes, very much so.
That shit's messed up. His mother, however, because of her Agatha Christie knowledge, she says she knows who the killer is.
Yep.
She's like, "It's the ambassador's son." And I'm like, "Well, okay." And then I turn, and then again, turn the movie off. It's over.
It's over. Yep. I mean, she told you.
That night, I guess, Luigi Pastilli, he's snooping. Because at this point, we don't know anything about him. We just know.
Who is this mystery man?
Yeah, he likes to roll around with the lady, which, you know, I'm not judging him. I guess that's okay.
Dagmar.
Yeah. Dagmar's a dude's name. Maybe. So he gets arrested because he's snooping in someone's house, and the cops beat the living crap out of him. He almost takes them, though. Like, and he loses his temper during the fight and nearly kills one of them.
Yeah.
But they call him in. Apparently, when they haul him in, it turns out that the dude, Inspector, what's Mahuzitz, he actually called in our pal Luigi to investigate. Because he was a former cop who was known as the Brute.
The Brute.
Because he was the king of police brutality, apparently. after his wife was murdered, and we never find out any details about his wife being murdered. We never find out that, you know, this killer is secretly the one who killed his wife or any of that shit.
She's a cipher.
Yes, she's gone. And that grief led him to become a bad cop. And we see a scene of him beating the living shit out of a hippie. but leaving his gun out for the hippie to get a hold of. And because he was so relentless with torturing this guy, the guy blows his brains out in front of him. And to save some money, they did what I call the Jess Franco technique.
Uh-huh.
Fake slow motion, Brad.
Yep.
I don't think they use it here, but they show it the scene from different angles later. But I want to talk about it because there's a famous scene of Jess Franco and Lena Romay. I think in this scene, he's playing her father and he's trying to molest her. And they do a slow motion sequence and they film the two of them pretending to be in slow-mo. And it is the saddest, pathetic shit ever. And it doesn't work here either.
No.
Oh, but yeah, I just wanted to talk about that shit. It was great.
Like, does it cost money to shoot in slow-mo? Or
I think it costs time because, unless I'm mistaken, you have to crank the camera a different way and or a different speed, and I think it wastes film.
Mm.
It's really weird. I'm not sure how they used to do it, but that's what I've heard is that they crank. So I think the setup is just, it costs time. Then, you know, time is money, maybe. He talks to Inspector Lawrence alone in the office. Things get hot because the inspector whips out his iguana. And I mean, he literally does a title drop for the movie. And the extras are so funny. They're trying to, the people in the extras are trying to figure out if they meant, because iguanas aren't really known for their tongues.
Or fire.
Right. It's chameleons that have the crazy tongues. But I don't know. So he talks about stepping on an iguana. Oh, that's right. Because he talks about stepping on an iguana that's invisible in the jungle. Iguanas don't change color.
No.
It's great. It's great. I mean, it's the, you know, the whole thing with the bird with the crystal plumage, the cat, 09 tails, Four Flies on Red Velvet, you know, all these titles that Argento did with his animal trilogy. Everyone was copying him, which is why you get all those seven deaths in the cat's
long,
eye. Yes.
Long titles.
The old barn bird that slaps the old chicken flesh. I don't know. Something.
The monkey told jokes until we all died.
What's the one? This is not one I made up. This is a real movie. Kill the fatted calf and roast it.
Yep. It's got old, was it Mary Lou Tolo?
Yep. It's it's definitely more of a family drama than anything. It's a decent movie.
I did not finish it. We were watching it one night, and I don't remember what happened, and we didn't finish it, and I've always meant to go back.
I'll tell you what happened is it probably wasn't the movie you were expecting, because that's what happened to me. And I was like, oh, okay, it's this kind of movie. Sure, all right. I was expecting
whatever.
I was expecting something else. He goes to get cleaned up by the doctor, the most suspicious doctor in all of Dublin.
Holy crap.
I mean, fuck it, dude. Arrest this guy. Arrest this freaking dude because he's definitely killed some patients.
He has killed someone for sure.
Man, I loved it. He's waving that freaking razor around. He's just shaving his head. But I love his line where he's like, oh, the police will never find the killer. He's too smart. Or he's much too clever.
Much too clever.
And then they have him sewing up his head because he has the little head injury from his fight with the cops.
Yeah. And it's pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty good effects.
I mean,
uncomfortable.
I think every spot on Luigi Pastilli's body has that. Like, it's just covered in hair. And you have to shave it to find the skin. That's his whole body.
Skin and stitches.
I was trying to weed some movies, and I was like, I never watch for a few dollars more.
Right.
I never watch it. I own it. I never watch it. And then I think about Luigi Pastilli smoking weed in it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I literally can't get rid of this movie without watching it one more time. just to see.
Now, that's the second one, right?
Yeah, dude.
Yeah, that's your favorite, isn't it?
Yeah, I like that. That's my favorite Leone, period.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just because I find his extravagant movie lengths a little punishing.
Yeah.
And they're supposed to hypnotize you. They're supposed to, like, you're supposed to be, you know, in it to win it and losing yourself in the film. But, you know,
In reality, Leone's got you robbing a bank or something, and you don't even realize it.
Him and Fellini are like, we got him.
Got him again.
Got those bitches.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Okay, I have some notes here. He runs into the Beardo, who I thought was the son, but I crossed that out.
Right.
And he knows the brute. He knows Luigi's past. So he's like, one of these days, one of your victims is going to do you. I'm like, really? So he goes to see the mother, and we get Valentina Cortese freaking going ballistic, chewing the scenery, acting the drunken fool dude. Mm-hmm. She brings it in this movie.
She doesn't hold back at all.
Apparently, she's supposed to be on drugs. She's supposed to be hitting some pills too hard. That's what her husband will say later. And I wrote in my notes, she acts like the female Pepe Le Pew in this.
Wow.
Oh, boy. So, of course, the husband comes home. And, you know, so her and the ambassador, Anton Differing's big moment, they're arguing. And he threatens to break her neck. And she's like, I dare you to touch me. Like, I dare you to try anything. It's because she somehow has got him by the balls. Probably because in his position, it's looked down on him to divorce. Or she just knows about his freaking lover. So he's just screwed. And that's when he just screams, you fucking bitch! Dude.
It's pretty unusual for a film of that era.
1971. And that was my screenshot for the movie, was him screaming, you fucking bitch. Back crazy. On the old article.
Uh-huh.
We get some scenic footage of good old Ireland.
Ireland,
right?
Uh-huh.
And
land of fire.
Luigi and our gal Dagmar are on a date. And she is like, dude, I know who you are. Like, everyone knows who you are, dumbass. He's like, oh, you knew I was a cop?
Everyone knows he's a cop.
Like, because, you know, he has a disguise on? No.
No.
She asks him why he quit the force, what happened, and this is when we get the full fake slow-mo.
Uh-huh.
I love it. Meanwhile, the Snoopy guy, our Sneaky Pete, gets murdered.
Yeah, what about that?
Hey, Brad, what about that?
Yeah. What about that? Well, the gentleman that talks about the film.
Yes.
Here, I've got his name right here. Richard Dyer. Like, they paid this man to talk about the iguana with the tongue of fire, and he's like, I don't know.
Yes. Yes.
Like, there's so many ginger mustaches.
And he clearly enjoys the film.
Absolutely. This is not him.
He's not dissing it, and that's what I love.
Yeah.
But, like, he don't know.
No, because like, no one know.
I don't understand what happened here.
Yeah.
And neither will you, folks, after listening to us talk about it, because we don't know.
No, you'll have less of an idea than you did.
Oh, God, it's so good.
Yeah, I love it.
So, yeah, our pal John goes looking for clues, and he finds a dead guy. He finds our bearded one, who apparently was somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Most definitely.
But back at his house, we have a moment, Brad, that I'm hoping you caught. That did you catch the Mrs. Slocum, the secret Mrs. Slocum reference?
I don't know.
Grandma is playing with her pet cat, and she is blatantly talking.
Oh, I did. Yep.
Talking about her pussy.
Yep. You're absolutely right.
Oh, my God, dude. Yeah, so it's a little TV show from England.
Yeah, maybe you heard of it.
called Father Ted. No, it's called The Vicar of Dibley.
Keeping Up Appearances.
Keeping Up Appearances. No, it's called Some Mothers Do Avum.
Whatever that means.
Oh, you've never seen that show?
No, I have not, but I've seen it. I've seen it, like, on stuff.
Dude, it's so good.
My thought is always, is it a penis?
Yes.
I knew it.
But the show actually is called Are You Being Served? I almost forgot because of our joking.
Yeah, I had actually forgotten.
We did it. We erased our own brains. Leanna's staring at me with like rage in her eyes. Yeah.
You forgot.
Yeah, but it's from Are You Being Served, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, dude.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, we just mentioned so many British shows that I totally forgot for a moment.
Yeah. Leanna just left in disgust.
Sure.
We were joking at first.
At first we were.
She's just pouring a glass of wine because she's got a... That's called her dealing with Richard juice.
Dealing with Richard juice.
Don't talk about me.
The bottle... That bottle is almost empty.
What are you drinking?
I need more water, actually. Lita's going to bring me some more water because she heard my joke about drinking the Richard juice. Yep. No, your wine is called the antidote to my marriage.
Mm.
Oh, and someone's calling. This is a busy night.
It is a busy night.
I'm not answering that shit.
Yeah.
Calls from the public? I don't think so.
Calls from the public. Calls.
It's just someone calling to remind me about my car's warranty, so we don't need it.
Well, they're doing the Lord's work.
Thank you, honey.
And you're just ignoring them.
That's right. I feel guilty now.
Well.
So Grandma, after playing with her pussy, finds a bloody razor wrapped in a bloody towel. And Luigi's like, oh, that? Look, check this out. And he's got like a quarter inch long cut on his neck covered in a huge bandage.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, that was that. So now we're having, you know, more suspicious, like more red herrings. Because this movie needs more confusion for the audience.
Well, yes.
We find the dead cat in the fridge. Like seconds, because we don't know how time passes in this universe. But it feels like mere minutes after she was petting her cat that it's now dead in the fridge.
The daughter comes in and she's like, it's me! I'm going to the kitchen!
Hi, I came home from school. I'm hungry. We haven't even talked about this little girl because there's a moment later that I find very unusual that affected my enjoyment of this film.
We'll
talk about that when we talk about that. But
sure.
Did you read the funny story about this cat and the fake blood? Okay, folks. I don't like animal violence in movies, obviously. But when it's staged, I don't care.
Yeah.
I literally don't care. However, this was a real stuffed cat that was alive at some point. And of course, they didn't kill it for the movie. It was already dead. But when Dagmar Lysander was flying to wherever she was flying to, and the... you know, the TSA at the time, whatever they were in 1971, were inspecting her luggage. They arrested her. Well, they held her at the airport security office because she had blood dripping from her suitcase.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't know what it was. Someone had packed the dead cat in her luggage with the bottle of fake blood.
Wow.
Maybe it's a joke, or maybe she was pretending she didn't know because she agreed to take it, but
yeah.
She was held for hours.
Wow.
Because it's illegal to transport animals, and they didn't believe her that it was a prop. They thought that she had packed this cat that had just died in her luggage.
Yeah, I could see why, because...
It was in the booklet that comes with the Blu-ray. It is the weirdest story. And I was I don't know what to believe. It's so weird.
It seems unusual. It sounds like a publicity stunt.
Yeah, exactly. That this backfired and made it look dumb.
Yeah.
Apparently they needed all the help they could get making money on this movie.
They really did.
So we go to Switzerland because what giallo have you seen, Brad? Name one. That doesn't have a bobsledding scene.
Well, I mean, let's see. None. They've all got one. Some mothers do have them.
Man, you know what you got to do? you've got to include a bobsled scene in your giallo. It's called Keeping Up Appearances.
She's like, there's my dad. And you're like, there's no way Anton Differing is doing this bobsledding.
Oh, my God. So, yeah, the bobsled crashes. And just like freaking Double Face, we get models and a fake little sled and fake little people that go over a fake little mountain and crash. And, dude, anyone in that crash, dead.
Dead.
We see Anton Differing with a cane going, ouch, that hurt.
Yeah, geez.
Oh, my God. You know what, dude?
He's not even wearing a cast.
Dudes, if you're going to do some shit in Italy in the 70s with models, you get yourself some Antonio Margheriti.
Margheriti.
Because he's going to do it right. So yep. The little dolls crash. That's what I wrote in my notes. Little dolls.
Oh.
Oh, boy. I wrote in my notes that the original title of this movie was The Iguana with the Tongue of Fire Who Sabotages a Bobsled. And then the most heartbreaking scene in the movie, dude. Back in Dublin, I think, freaking Luigi finds the wife, the ambassador's wife, in her bathtub, quote-unquote, in a suicide attempt.
It's so weird because the butler answers the door and he's like, oh, thank God you're here. The mistress, she just tried to commit suicide. And you're like, would you have not called someone if he hadn't showed up?
Yeah, because, dude, throat slashed and wrist slashed.
It's terrible.
She's committed to the crime. And you know what movie I thought of when I saw that?
What?
Freaking $5 for an August Moon. I was thinking of that one.
Yeah.
That's got the big bathtub scene in it.
Mm-hmm.
But this scene actually like breaks my heart, like, cause I love her character. It's so sad.
Yeah, it's very sad.
Of course, it wasn't a suicide attempt. The freaking killer tried to get her, but we'll deal with that.
Yeah.
He finds a broken sunglass lens.
Mm-hmm.
Because of course, the chauffeur claims to have conjunctivitis. And he broke his sunglasses when he found her. And left her to die.
Yep.
Now she's recovering in the ICU, but she either won't tell him what happened or can't tell him what happened. It doesn't make any sense.
No.
And we get my favorite scene in any mystery ever, be they British, frickin' Italian, or Spanish, American, when the person who knows who the killer is calls the cop. To tell him, I know who it is, but I can't tell you over the phone. Or in this case, I think he's about to tell him, and the killer gets him.
It's one of Elizabeth's favorite tropes is when Elizabeth says, you never blackmail the killer, ever.
Yep. You should, because it won't come back to haunt you.
No.
So yeah, we get another acid slashing going on.
Acid slasher.
Then, we have this whole sequence where Dagmar and a police officer escort, who's been guarding Luigi's apartment, they show up at the door in this weird staged, like, fashion plate moment.
She looks like a buccaneer. Or Three Musketeers.
Oh, my God. They could have handled this scene in any way, but they did not do it right. It's more surreal, and I love it. So it's great they didn't do it, because she looks through the peephole, and instead of standing within 20 feet of the door, they're at the end of the hall, so we get a really good look at her outfit.
Yeah, she's got her hand on her hip and just flexing.
She's like, I'm a pirate who doesn't wear pants.
Pirates have no pants.
Oh, shit. Yeah, she has a cape on and a wide-brim hat. She looks ridiculous. meanwhile, John is looking for Mark. And I wrote the name Mark in my notes. And Mark is her brother?
Mm.
Luigi Pastilli's looking for Mark. I don't know who the fuck that is.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the real villain of the movie is their daughter. Is Luigi's daughter trying to scare grandma to death. We have a great fake scare with her scaring grandma because maybe grandma's got some inheritance she wants.
It's terrible.
That's so mean, dude. Oh,
it's real mean.
Later, the killer that night. This is the sequence that if you had the old bootleg, you could not tell what happened. The killer tries to run over Dagmar, and we have a bridge chase, and she does the most crazy shit. she tries to catch the drawbridge as it's raising up, and in a move that I call a big old cup of oh hell no.
Uh-huh.
She's holding on to the drawbridge as it's raising, and she has to fall into the water.
Yeah.
And I am surprised that didn't give me nightmares.
I told Elizabeth, I'm like, oh, it's the old drawbridge trap.
Dude, I didn't know that this was like freaking Final Destination or some shit.
Yeah. Happy birthday to me.
And what's better is she might as well have died here. And I think, honestly, they meant for her to die because we never see her again.
No, we don't.
We have a conversation between two bridge workers who are like, well, glad we saved her ass. She's in shock.
Uh-huh.
And Dagmar wasn't even there.
No.
It's so cute. They don't even have a picture of her with it, like a blanket wrapped around her sipping coffee. They couldn't even get that. So I suspect they meant to kill her there.
Yeah, I mean, we don't see her again.
Yep. Back at the apartment, someone's ringing the doorbell. She looks out. She sees a figure in a cape and in a big old brimmed hat. She thinks it's freaking Dagmar, lets her in. Meanwhile, our pal daughter is using the sun lamp. She's in bed using the sun lamp. And the killer attacks her and tries to use the sun lamp to burn her face, even though the killer also has acid.
Right. Well, you don't want to waste it.
This is the scene I don't care for.
I know exactly what you're saying.
Hey, it was a different time.
Sure.
We've seen some very uncomfortable, you know, nude scenes of young people in Gialli. The one I always think of, unfortunately, I don't want to think about it, is from My Dear Killer, because one of the red herrings is a a terrible, terrible pedophile, presumably, and he just has naked child running around his house, and you're like, why? But this actress is not credited, probably to protect her identity.
I'd say so.
But she's like 14 and just is butt-ass nude. I don't care for it, man. It makes my skin crawl. Like, I guess this is the pervert test, like.
Yeah.
Like, if you're the same age, if you're 14, you go, ooh, you're okay. If you're in your 40s and go, ooh, go to the police.
Yeah.
You're a fucking
turn
maniac.
Yourself in. No, it makes me uncomfortable. Yeah. She's topless and
I mean, I don't know. Whatever. Let's move on before I freaking start crying.
Okay.
The killer's trying to kill her. The killer is beating grandma's ass.
Beating her ass down.
I mean, like, he's trying to redecorate the apartment with her face. It's amazing. Yeah.
It's crazy.
And, like, I'm like, well, you know, she's had a good run. Can you just, grandma, can you just give your freaking granddaughter a sweater to put on?
Yeah, please. Could somebody find a bra?
Oh my God, help us. So the cop hears, Luigi's downstairs chit-chatting with the cop outside. He hears the screaming. He runs upstairs. They have a big, long fight scene. It's a crazy fight scene.
Uh-huh. It really is.
So the daughter now has horrible burns all around her eyes. She might as well have gotten the acid.
Ugh.
It's so bad. Her life might be ruined. It's so sad.
It's rough.
And then
it's rough.
The killer is revealed as the bald person
that we've not seen.
Here's the thing. There's a scene I skipped. There's a scene that is so unimportant to me that I did not write it in my notes. We saw this character from behind, and we've seen this character in a hat. But more importantly, we saw them from behind at the Turkish bath. So, bearded guy, who the fuck who knows who he is, one of the mustachioed gentlemen, and this bald person are supposed to be gay.
Yeah, and you'd never know that.
I think one of them makes a joke about some party they're being invited to that the host is gay. And the Beardo guy...
They're like, it's going to be a sausage factory.
They're making... That's where the sausages get made?
Yeah.
Dude, it's this movie. And we're going to add insult to energy to...
Add insult to energy.
Wow, it's like synergy. What is that? In synergy? I don't know. So the gay thing, we'll get back to that in a minute. So
yeah,
he is fighting with this killer who whips out his freaking razor and is slashing away. And Dad has another slow-mo flashback. Like, he's still traumatized by causing a person to kill themselves. But not so traumatized that he doesn't grab the killer and bash his head into an iron that's sitting on the ironing board. And I winced, dude. That's rough.
Yeah, it certainly is.
I think these effects are great, man.
They are.
The killer realizes he can't take Luigi Pastilli, so he dives out the window, and we get to see the freaking spoiler of the poster artwork.
Mm.
One of the other things about this movie that is so weird, the German and I think some of the Italian art features our killer bald as the day is bald and bleeding from the head, looking like a Frankenstein's monster.
Mm.
And it's like he falls out the window, falls through the car, but I'm like, why are they spoiling this shit on the poster? Yeah. Like, I'm used to the spoilers in the trailer.
Yes, exactly.
And, you know, what I have a little bit of trivia about this movie. I don't want to get into the whole thing. We'll talk about that. But, yeah, there's a lot of reasons why this movie didn't do very well.
Oh, yeah.
So, anyway, killer's killed. And then we have a wrap-up scene with our pal, the ambassador, still walking with a cane from his near-tragic bobsledding accident. And we have our inspector and Luigi talking about this shit. Sorting out what happened.
Yes.
Okay, Brad, I'm going to say my theory that I got. Okay. I wrote in my notes. He mad because he bald?
Yes.
There's more to it.
Well, he's wearing the worst bald cap ever. It just makes him look like a mongoloid.
It's terrible. It's completely terrible.
His head is gigantic. So he's got hair, but then a bald cap over some of that hair. It's real bad.
Do you know what it would have been easier? You know what would have been a lot easier?
What's that?
Same actor, no bald cap. He just no himself. And then we can explain what really... So he wanted to shame the family, okay?
Right.
He wanted to shame the family, and therefore he was killing people. Dude, apparently he didn't commit the first two murders.
No, apparently not.
So the first woman was a Swiss citizen that angered Anton Differing, the ambassador. He threw acid in her face and slashed her.
Yeah, like you do.
He was trying to hide her identity from the police so he could make his mistress disappear. Then he killed Dominique Bachero, the governess, because she was blackmailing him.
Right.
Then his illegitimate son? Or son?
Stepson?
Stepson, yeah. Valentina Cortez's son, who could be any of like three different people in this movie.
He
started taking up the kills and killing with the same method to blame the father.
Right.
Get me a fucking life preserver because I'm drowning in this. All of this, other than me saying he mad because he bald, is from the extras.
Yes, I learned from Richard Dyer's interview or where he's talking.
Yeah.
He makes some excellent points. It's about two families, and he's also mad that he's gay.
Yes.
So, I don't know.
Yeah, he's and this is a little line of dialogue, but he's mad at normal families because he's quote-unquote gay, which, you know, the scene, I guess that would be them dealing with censorship in that time by making it so ambiguous, it still sucks.
Yeah, I mean, there's no way. If they did not say that, you wouldn't be like, oh, it was the gay son.
Right.
Oh, because you'd have no idea.
Yeah.
They'd have been better off saying he was crazy.
Yeah. He was,
you know,
he was never accepted into the family because he was from the previous marriage.
Right.
Or he was just illegitimate to begin with. So he was trying. Everything makes sense on paper when you have a British person explain it to you in a Blu-ray extra.
And he mentions that he mentions one of my favorite, probably one of yours too. In the Folds of the Flesh, he's like, now that is a crazy movie.
Yes. Flashback
to... He's like, you're just...
Yeah.
Yes.
Jeffrey...
Flashback to an imaginary scene.
Yeah. Jeffrey and I covered that a long time ago. In the Folds of the Flesh is one of the craziest movies. Just of any genre.
Sure it was hard to talk about, even.
Yeah, that was back in the scene-by-scene days, so you can imagine.
Uh-huh.
It's longer than the movie.
Yeah.
Just like this one might be.
But, well, it's my big welcome back.
Brad is back! So,
we're talking.
We did the whole plot. That's the whole movie. Apparently, Anton Differing is going to get arrested when he goes back to his home country, because he's been claiming diplomatic immunity this whole time. Like, what a surprise he'll get when he goes back home. However, and now, folks, I'm not making fun of Irish people. I'm making fun of the shittiest acts ever.
I mean, it is true that they get production value. They shoot in Ireland.
Switzerland.
It is actually. Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. And Freda was just kind of working sporadically, I think, at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a question time that we'll delve into. It's actually specific to this film.
Nice, nice.
When we get there.
Yeah, he disowned this movie, which is why his name is not on it. He was very disappointed with how it came out. According to the booklet, let me credit this. So the Arrow video comes with Andreas Ehrenreich. Oh, excuse me. Mm. No, Andreas Ehrenreich. He writes an excellent essay on the film that is pages and pages long, and it is the most detailed production notes of a giallo I've ever seen. I've never seen...
Wow.
I've read Argento's autobiography. There's less info about his own movies in that book than this dude found. He found all of the documentation of this film from, like, for example... getting the censorship application in, or getting the application just to film it, doing that thing where they hire a certain number of Italian people in order to make this get a subsidy. It has the German producers are covered, the French producers are covered, location scouting or like location shooting is covered. Dude, it is so long. It would be exhaustively boring for me to do. I'll just read it to you. But the stuff I pulled from it, one was that story about Dagmar Lysander's bleeding suitcase. The other thing is the casting. Did you know about who they wanted for this movie?
Yeah, they wanted friggin' Roger Moore.
Yes, Ricardo Freyda desperately wanted Roger Moore in this movie. Do you know there's more?
Is there?
Yes. Luigi Pistilli's character could have been played by Ivan Razumov.
Ooh.
We could have had Ivan Razumov as the main good guy in a giallo.
That's interesting.
Which I don't know that ever happened.
No.
I don't remember him being a protagonist. I mean, maybe he survived to the end of one before.
maybe.
But here's the other thing. Guess who they wanted to play Anton Differing's character?
Who?
Freaking James Mason, dude.
James Mason, that would have been good.
James Mason, no stranger to slumming it.
No, and you know, you hear about these things, and like Cara Delia is in Devil in the Brain.
Yes.
And Cara Delia was worldwide known, you know, but he was slumming. But like, Argento talks about how in Four Flies of Grey Velvet, he's like, I wanted Paul McCartney. And you're just like, you're never going to get Paul McCartney. We wanted Pink Floyd to do the soundtrack. And you're like, well, that wasn't going to happen either.
And you know, you just imagine Argento at a party rubbing elbows with Paul McCartney.
Yeah.
And I just imagine this conversation. Paul McCartney's like, seems like one of those people that just says yes to everything. And then yes. His lawyer's like, hi, no.
No.
Hi. Fuck no.
No, we're not doing that.
So this was shot by our friend and yours, Silvano Ippoliti. Silvano uh-huh. was a big collabo guy in the 60s with Tinto Brass. Before Tinto Brass became Tinto Ass.
Porno.
With his butt brass. Butt movies. He was
right.
He worked on the giallo called Deadly Sweet, aka mm-hmm. I Am What Let's I Am, it. Which is a great pop art giallo movie. It's so fun. If you haven't seen Tinto Brass's artsy stuff from around this time, mm-hmm. Nero Subianco, I think it's called Black and White. The following year, he did one called The Howl, which is also really good. Very artsy.
You multiple sent genres. Me a copy of The Howl. I've yeah. not seen it, but you sent me a nice copy yeah. of that.
It's very good. It's very strange. They're both very, 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 very artsy.
Right.
And of course, Deadly Sweet has its art aspirations as well.
Right.
But this guy shot Smile Before Death. And he shot.
I love that one.
Oh, yeah, dude. He was the DP on Caligula, so I bet he had some stories about that shit.
Boy.
Oh, brother. He directed a movie I don't want to watch, but I can't not look at it now, called Delito in Formula Uno. So Crime in Formula One.
Ooh.
One of Bruno Corbucci's comedies starring...
Oh, boy.
Yep, you got this. Starring Thomas Milian as one of his most famous characters, Inspector Nico Garaldi.
Man.
Have you seen one of these movies yet?
No, I don't think so.
I have watched 1.2. I couldn't get through one. The giallo that he did with Corbucci. So Thomas Milian, in his later career, hit on this character that he played over and over again, this Nico guy who was huge. Huge for him. And he's this bumbling cop who you think is a moron, but then of course he solves the case. And they're all comedy giallo movies with they do disco sequences, like Cop in Drag. The one I saw is Assassination on the Tiber.
Yeah, I haven't seen that either.
1979. It's actually fun. It's a lot of fun.
Really?
And it's like a real giallo.
Huh.
But it's also really stupid.
Right.
And there's a scene from it on YouTube. You'll find it in a heartbeat of him in his red sequined disco uniform singing a disco song. And of course,
very nice.
Who would give Thomas Milian a record deal? Someone very smart. So it might actually be him singing that song.
Man, that would be crazy.
It is a crazy movie.
I am not a huge Thomas Milian fan.
Me neither. Gotta say.
Yeah.
I don't hate him or anything, but he was in a lot of movies I couldn't get into.
Yeah. Like he's the villain in some Maurizio Merli films.
Yes. Yeah, he would play the hunchback. Or he would in one he's playing a Chinese guy.
Yeah.
Or a half Chinese guy. Oh, it's crazy. It's crazy. What a weird career he had.
Very. But it seems like he's a nice guy. He's older on Facebook now, and you could be friends with him.
Aww. Yeah, I think he's like one of those dudes who just has a bonkers ass career.
Yeah. So, what did you think about the movie?
Okay. I remember from the old bootleg days, even with the crappy copy, not being able to see it, I've always held this in very high regard.
Yes.
And this was one of the hottest Blu-rays for me because
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't believe this had a Blu-ray.
It's like I told Lanny in a text message, because he said he had not seen it. I said, it's crazy to think that this got a Blu-ray when, like, The Case of the Bloody Iris still does not.
Exactly. But at the same time, this is the greatest age for film collectors.
It's true.
I mean, until one day when they can download the experience of watching the film in the theater for the first time into your brain, you know, that'll be pretty cool. But
yeah,
I mean, I can't believe you can upgrade almost every single freaking giallo that you bought on DVD back in the early 2000s. And hey, I would rather more obscure stuff was coming out, but
sure,
slowly we're chipping away at all those blank spots. And there's still lost films. There's still movies that we'll have dupes of from old VHS tapes that someone taped off of TV in Italy and some kind soul did fan subs for that we'll never see them. They're lost forever. And that's the way the giallo cookie crumbles.
Yeah.
Watching this on Blu-ray and seeing everything for the first time and really absorbing the plot, not in a movie-thon setting where it kind of doesn't matter what the plot is, like actually trying to keep track of what's going on and coming up short. Mm-hmm. And the fact is that this movie is broken.
Yeah.
I love it. I still love this movie, and I still can't believe I waited 3 years to watch this fucking Blu-ray, dude.
If I had realized that, I would have pressed forward. Dude,
well, we had other priorities, but we knew we'd get to it. You know, we're not done with Freda. We are definitely not done with Freda yet. But how do you like this one?
I think it's great. It doesn't make a lick of sense. And it, like I said, they pay this guy, presumably, to discuss the film. And he's like, you know, giallos are known for not, you know, being the most sensical films. And this one is even on the high end of that scale. I can believe that Freda took his name off of it. I can see it's just crazy. Like, there's no... It's like a film filled with red herrings, and then you get to the killer, and you're like, I didn't even know who that was. But no, I'm so glad that I upgraded, because it was absolutely worth it. You know, you've got a brilliant Cipriani score. My next band name for a non-existent band is Luigi Pastilli Fights in the Dark, because I thought about him in Twitch of the Death and Earth, Fighting in the Dark.
Oh my God, yes.
And he fights in the dark in this movie, I think, two or three times.
Yes.
And Pastilli, like, Dagmar's like, you're so handsome. And I'm like, what is wrong with Dagmar?
She's been in Switzerland too long.
Apparently so. But no, I think it's great. And like you, I had forgotten that I love Dagmar, but I had forgotten that she was in it.
Yep. She's practically a set piece with that fucking outfit.
I'm telling you. Stylish. She needs a sword and a scabbard.
Yeah, dude. Just swinging that shit around.
Yeah. But no, I love it. I think it's great. I'm glad you and I have talked about covering this for a while, obviously. And we knew that when I came back, we were going to hit this right off the bat.
Bam.
It's great.
Awesome. In case my voice sounds a little different, it's because I realized I was using the wrong fucking microphone for like an hour. So enjoy the soothing sounds of my heartbreak of my own incompetence haunting me in the night.
These things happen.
No, they don't.
I lost a whole show once.
I lost my virginity eventually.
Sometime.
We'll talk about that. We'll do my rebirthing ceremony later where I'm born again. This time it's going to be a slide covered in jelly.
A slide covered in jelly.
Yeah. Jello, jello. Who moved the tombstone?
Jello, jello. Who moved the tombstone? It was the Richard.
Brad, what you got for me? Save me from myself.
So, question time. And it somewhat pertains to this film, but it is a larger question in general.
Okay.
So, I'm going to read you some titles and then say something. A Lizard in a Woman's Skin, The Fifth Cord, The Strange Vice of Mrs. Ward, The Case of the Scorpion's Tail, Black Belly of the Tarantula, The Cat of Nine Tails, Four Flies on Gray Velvet, Cross Current, The Iguana with a Tongue of Fire, A Bay of Blood, The Devil with Seven Faces. These are all films that IMDb says are 1971. Is 1971 for the giallo what 1981 is for the slasher film?
Oh, yeah, I like that. Yes. I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right because, I mean, 72 is the we overdid it year. I think
right.
1971 might be the holy shit, we have struck gold. This will never yeah. end. So yeah. I think you're absolutely on point because, of course, by 73, the public in Italy was like, get this shit out of our faces.
Yeah, we're done.
But, you know, nobody really figured it out till 74, 75 when they actually right. tried to stop making gialli, or they tried to make hybrid ones so that people would be fooled and go uh-huh. to see a Polizio Tesci film or go and see a gothic horror film that also just happened to be a giallo.
Right.
But no, I really like that. And what a banner year, too. Because I always forget Four Flies and Gray Velvet is so early.
Uh-huh.
Right? Was yeah. that 71?
It's according to IMDb.
Wow. Because he rushed.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, because he rushed Cat of Nine Tails.
Yes.
Which is why I think Argento still thinks it's so bad.
Yeah. According to the trailer on here from Shameless, which is called Four Flies on Gray Velvy.
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 Yeah, Velvy.
It says 1971. But I do know that in 71 there were a lot of films. A lot. You know, this is really where they hit. And of course, I think there's probably, you know, in 81 with the slasher, you had... is what we consider to be a straight-up slasher, Halloween and Friday the 13th in 80. And, of course, you had some other films like He Knows You're Alone and things
yeah.
like that.
Yeah, yeah.
But then 81,
forget it.
Halloween Part 2, Friday the 13th Part 2, Final Exam, The Prowler, just on and on and on.
My Bloody Valentine.
My Bloody Valentine.
Yeah, dude.
So yeah, I thought that would be a good question, considering that what we covered just now was in 71. Of course, as I told Lanny, I said I don't know that Iguana with a Tongue of Fire is going to be on very many top 10 giallo lists.
No.
I do enjoy it quite a bit. You've got Name Power, Anton Differing, and just a world of European cinema was in several things.
Totally. Yeah, and it's the gore, much like the following years, Crimes of the Black Cat, the gore in these mm-hmm. is way ahead of its time.
There's like that one scene where a hand is cut up, but before it is, we see what appears to be an oversized photo of Pastilli's face. Do you remember that?
No.
You're at the end in the final confrontation.
Right.
And it goes to Pastilli's face. And it's not him. It's a cardboard cutout or a giant photo,
what?
Something, because it's just still. And you can tell it's two-dimensional.
That's so...
And a hand goes up in front of it, and the razor slashes the hand.
So that they cheated. Yeah. They tried to... They didn't do a pickup shot, and they tried to cheat.
Yes, I'd say that's exactly what happened, because I can't think of any other reason
why... What? That's freaking...
While they would do that.
That's
but yeah, next
crazy.
Time you watch it, look for that.
Let's see. Makeup artist is credited as Lamberto Marini, who did the makeup. Hmm. Is it makeup and... Okay, he was just listed as makeup. Nothing for special effects or anything. But I don't see anything like a giallo as bloody as this one in his...
Mm-hmm.
In his filmography. Because I was thinking of course, you know, like I mentioned, the Crimes of the Black Cat. I was also thinking mm-hmm. of... Oh, no, title flew out of my head.
That's minute my decision. Now we had a good night.
Oh, shit. Dude. Murder Syndrome. He was also doing the makeup, and I think the budget for the the gore effects and Murder Syndrome was about 1/8 of this one, because, you know, it's got one of the worst severed heads in human history. This is one of those films that it just doesn't feel like 71. But I like your question, Tom. It is very interesting to think, like...
Thank you.
Because 72 is kind of like bugging me a little bit. Like, I think maybe that almost wins just because of the sheer numbers. But I also might be getting a little mixed up with stuff from 73 as well. So, yeah, no, I like that. I like it. It's like our pal Freda, he did sword and sandal movies when they were hot. Mm-hmm. He did spaghetti westerns when they were hot. He did the frickin' spy movies when they were hot. Mm-hmm. He did the giallo when they were hot. He went on to do the horror movies. I mean, obviously horror. He was, you know, I, Vampiri and Caltiki. Mm-hmm. You know, those things were the big trend. So it stands to reason that every genre, subgenre of Italian genre cinema is going to have that banner year. Mm-hmm. It's going to have that year where everyone was making sword and sandal movies to the point where the public is confused and angry.
Well, I tend, without thinking about years, I tend to think of Sergio Martino's Torso as being late in the cycle, and it's 73.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Because it feels, it's again, it's that thing of being ahead of the game. Because, you know, it's a perfect example of a giallo versus proto-slasher in one movie.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. We could just do an episode talking about those. And then we've probably done underrated eras of the giallo and how it, because, you know, people, you know, they say that, like, it was over by 72.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, yeah, the zeitgeist and what the public wanted was over in 72. But how come I'm watching gialli from the early 80s? How come I'm watching gialli that were made in 77? Like, some great stuff happened.
Exactly.
And then I'm watching nothing underneath. And I'm watching, like, you know, stuff
from... Stage Fright.
Which is, you know, and Stage Fright is an intentional... Like, we've got to get away from the giallo because it's the slasher now. We got to focus on the slasher, and that's why I love stuff like, you know, from other countries, obviously, frickin' Bloody Moon.
Mm-hmm.
Bloody Moon ain't no slasher, man. Frickin' Pieces ain't no slasher. I mean, yeah, they're trying to be slashers, but look at the movies, dude.
Yeah.
The reveal comes, and you're like, whoa, giallo.
Whoa, giallo.
Yeah, dude, no, I love this stuff. I hell, you could even technically say the giallo never ended.
No, not really.
Freaking Argento's got one coming out this year.
Yeah, he does. Well, and then you talk about Brian De Palma taking and doing his own American giallo. You've got Clute, which is somewhat of an American giallo. Then you've got, like, the late 80s and 90s erotic thrillers that were super hot. And a lot of those have giallo style.
Dude.
You know, murder mysteries. You know, it's attractive people getting murdered.
I just watched The Rain Killer. And that, The Rain Killer, is an American production. It's got frickin' the Chiklis. Got Chiklis. As one of the
That's right. You were telling me.
Michael Chiklis is one of the supporting characters in the movie, and it is full on giallo, 90s, early 90s.
Really?
Yeah, it was good. I mean, well, okay, let me rephrase that. It sucked, but I enjoyed the experience.
Right, and that's really, isn't that what matters, honestly?
Yeah.
Like,
oh yeah.
We're not gonna tell anybody that Guano with a Tongue of Fire is a great movie.
Nah,
but we loved it. You know,
dude, if,
and that's really what matters.
If I only kept the movies that made sense, I wouldn't have any movies.
No.
I certainly wouldn't have a horror movie collection. I'd have very few.
No.
I'd have like six movies.
So I've had an idea for a new segment.
I like we'll segments, bruh.
If it goes over, it may not. I don't know. But I was thinking about where we could both pick a double feature, and it could be two movies that are similar, two movies that are disparate, two movies that make sense to watch as a double feature, because I'm sure, I know you're this way, I know Simon's this way, we're always thinking of movie-thons and how to group them together, and so a double feature is easy, something easy to put together. Now, I thought I would start with one of, in my mind, one of the easiest double features of the entire, I'm sure a lot of our friends of the show have thought about this before.
Right.
But I think a great double feature is Messiah of Evil and the movie that's just flown right out of my mind, Let's Scare Jessica to Death.
Yes. Oh, God. Wow.
I think that would be a great double feature.
No, I really like that. I really like that. Yeah, because you've got the similar era, you know, the early 70s, but you've got two just magical films in their own right and so different. It would give you such a weird mental palette afterwards.
Yeah.
Like, you would have crazy nightmares. That would be really cool.
Well, and they're both similarly, is this really happening? You know?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. I'm looking at my shelves. I'm cheating a little because
please do.
I am just like, there's so many possibilities here. There's so many possibilities that are just like,
yes.
What is that? I'm trying to remember the name of the movie real quick.
Dr. Jekyll versus the Wolfman.
Ooh.
Paired with The Creeping Flesh.
Oh, wow.
So just imagine, yeah, let's call this like the mental drive-in or something.
All right.
Or like the let's clean the theater. I don't know where that phrase is going to be. Yeah, just imagine like, what would be the order though? Like, you know what? Creeping Flesh first. So people go, man, that movie was weird. And then they're watching Dr. Jekyll versus the Wolfman going, no, this movie is fucking weird.
No, I think that would be a great pairing.
Man, that'd be fun. Cause you know, like that's, I just watched, The Creeping Flesh for the first time in a while. And it just gets me. Like, ever since that's one of my childhood favorites.
Absolutely.
Saw it when I was like 10 or 9 or something, and it put me in a weird mood. Like, I was just wandering around, and it was a overcast day, and it just was like, I couldn't stop thinking. I couldn't get that movie out of my mind. It was like the first time that I was like haunted by something I saw.
Right.
In a good way. In a very good way.
Sure.
Nice. No, this is hot, dude. I want to do this every episode. That's great.
Let's do it. Yeah. It just, not a lot of prep work, really.
No.
And you're just putting together something. And if somebody out there agrees and tries it, let us know.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, because that's the thing.
Not this is revolutionary or anything, but.
Folks, you can follow them on either Twitter or Facebook, or I think they're also on Instagram, which is Groovy Doom. Groovy Doom.
Groovy Doom.
They are going through, they have like a newspapers.com account, right? And they are like sorting through all those drive-in ads for horror stuff.
Oh, yeah.
All those theaters. Yes. Those all-night movie marathons where they have like this list of movies that are more or less, you know, covered, you know, they're more or less covered. God, I keep saying covered. They're more or less connected by a theme, even if it's a tenuous theme.
Mm-hmm.
It's like my poster for, I can just look in my hallway, I guess. Oh, it's the Orgy of the Living Dead poster.
Uh-huh.
Let me look this up real quick. No, not the film, because that's what The Hanging Woman is also known as.
That is such a great movie.
Oh, of course it is. I mean, that Blu-ray is nice.
I need to get the Blu-ray.
You should. They had issues with it, but they went ahead and sent out replacement discs of Full Moon.
Nice.
That Full Moon makes a lot of boo-boos with their releases, but
sure.
The two Blu-rays that were messed up that I got from them, they fixed. immediately. And I didn't even have to request the replacement for the naked girl killed in the park. Everyone who bought one from them, they sent it out automatically.
Wow, that's the way it ought to be.
Right. And exactly. And freaking supposedly Orgy of the Living Dead had issues, but they had already fixed it. So I think it's safe to just get it. And if not, they're cool. So, you know, I wish they'd get things right the first place, but that's neither here nor there. So anyway, this poster I have, I don't have the full color one. I wish I did. I have the one sheet. I have the press book. Mm-hmm. So the press book is usually two colors, maybe three. Mine is faded orange and black and white. And this is amazing. It's Revenge of the Living Dead, Curse of the Living Dead, and Fangs of the Living Dead. Now, Fangs of the Living Dead is the only one of these three that actually, that's its title.
Uh-huh. And it's an Asoria, right?
Yes, it is. It is the one with Anita Ekberg. Curse of the Living Dead is actually Kill Baby Kill.
Ah.
But what is Revenge of the Living Dead? It's another banger, though. It was Murder Clinic.
Oh, nice.
Can you imagine seeing Kill Baby Kill, frickin' Murder Clinic, and Fangs of the Living Dead? And Fangs of the Living Dead is like the weakest of the three, and it's still good.
I think that's got a Blu-ray now.
Yes. Yes.
That's what I thought.
And I'm confirming, because I think we talked about this on our Murder Clinic episode. Yeah. Yeah, we did talk about this in the Murder Clinic episode. So, flashback to that. I've had this poster forever, dude.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's the thing. Like, they're not cheap now, but at the time when I was picking up a lot of posters, press books were kind of forgotten.
Uh-huh.
And I picked up some really cool ones. I've got press books for, you know, I love bragging, but the most I paid for one of these was like $20 at most.
You bought hella press books for a while.
Yeah, dude. I got The Devil's Wedding Night. I've got They're Coming to Get You, a.k.a. All the Colors of the Dark. I've got some other ones. The hallway doesn't have a light on right now, so I can't tell, but... And, you know, now it's like everyone, it's like for a long time, Mexican lobby cards were super cheap.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't care what language your poster is in, you can find your classics. Like, I have a Mexican lobby card for Phenomena.
Uh-huh.
Could I afford that beautiful Creepers poster? No.
Right.
You know? Could I afford an Italian poster for Phenomena? Fuck no. But I can find... between $20 and $40, a beautiful lobby card, full color of one of the scenes from freaking Phenomena. It's like wonderful.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, now I'm just rambling, yo.
Well, no, those were great choices.
Dude, you too. You nailed it. I love it. It's almost like it's your concept.
Realized. It takes a team to dream the work. Or something.
It takes two to ride the stripper pole.
To make everything all right.
Folks, I want to thank you for listening. Brad.
As do I.
Brad, thank you for coming back, boy.
I mean, exactly. And you're going to be hearing more from me this year. And I know I say that every year, but I've already had COVID twice.
Oh, Jesus.
My health is much better.
Yay. To that part. I like that part.
All my grandparents are dead, so I think it's smooth sailing.
Oh, no. What is it you said on an episode where you're like, we were going to record, but my mother-in-law died? And I said, yeah. And I said, that was not my intention.
Well, we were actually going to record this in January, but I got COVID for the second time.
Oh, God.
But no, I do, seriously, for real. We're going to knock out some episodes.
Hell yeah.
And we're just going to dazzle you like we always do and bring 110%.
That's right. We're like that comic book character named Dazzler.
That's right.
That's right.
Disco. Disco.
Goodbye, folks.
See ya.
Hello, This Is the Doom Show is a proud member of the Legion Podcast Network. Please check out the other podcasts on legionpodcasts.com. If you'd like more Hello, This Is the Doom Show, go to hellodoomshow.podomatic.com or go to doomedmoviethon.com for the archives. If that's still not enough, go to @doomedmoviethon on Twitter. You can write in to Hello, This Is the Doom Show. Use the email doomedmoviethon@gmail.com. Doom Show episodes are available on record and 8-track cassette.